Pilchriedel 6.
Yeah. So then our quartermaster had a terrible task, you know, to find the food for about, I don't know, about 1,300 or 1,400 people, and of course they feed the horses. We had about, probably about 500 horses. So that, you know, there was a really major task, no supply from outside whatsoever. I remember one quite a big farm. We arrived there in the morning, and there was a big village around the farm, around the so the whole people stayed in the village, and I was the headquarter. Had a quarter in the farmhouse, you know, and this. I never wanted, you know, to, in during the whole my life, partisan's life, I didn't wanted, you know, to sleep in somebody's bed. Because, you know, there were, especially in our circumstances, there were various people sleeping in such a bed before. And I hate this. So I prefer to have a blanket, which I had with me, and simply a piece of straw, and sleep, you know, on the floor. That was my... I never had lice, you know, because of that. And you know, in the bed, it looks very nice. It looked clean. But, you know, there was always, nearly always something, you know, in that. So I was it was very hot, the July day, and I was in the, not a stable, but in the barn. In the barn, resting a bit, and quartermaster arrived himself with a very nice horse. Look, you have got a very nice horse here, because what we found, they are preparing to evacuate everything to the East Prussia. And we can't allow this. All right. So we take all everything. There was, you know, the cows, there were sheep, there were horses, and so on and so on. All right, so we take over and we will have a food, you know, for us and for the horses. And then we had a sort of, it is called our police, you know, there was a policing, the commanding of the police came to me and said, look, there is a terrible thing happened here before. The what? You know, the manager of this farm and the owner of this farm treated very badly the people from the village. He beat them, and they had to work 7 days a week with no pay. And in few cases, there were even, you know, the reports to the Germans, and the few people were killed because of his activities. All right, I ask, where is he? All right, we don't know yet. Are you trying to find him? Yes, we are trying. But they found that when we arrived, you know, he escaped, you know, to the Germans. So we took, you know, everything what was to be taken, you know, and had food for a few days, you know, this. And it was in a few other cases too. You know, the German managers of the farms within the border, simply, all right, it was German. Why shouldn't be German? We are hungry and we need food and so on and so on, and you know this. No one bothers, you know, to think about this, that is not ours. You know? We didn't take, you know, any food, you know, from the village, absolutely. We didn't have money, as then over there, the money was nothing. There were, you know, the people were living in the east. The people were living, and there were only exchange mart. There were no money. When somebody brought, you know, a piece of meat, you know, to the town, all right, what can you give me for this? No, I need some, have you got some clothing? Because we need clothing. Or have you got some kitchen utensils? Have you got some pans or something like that? All right, yes, and they changed this, you know. That was during the war, because the money meant nothing. Because even if somebody got the money, there was impossible to buy something. The money was not absolutely invalid, was not valid. Then we arrived, I think it is 26th or 27th of June, to the Campinus Forest. And we organized there. There was a local commander of the conspiracy, Polish conspiracy, Polish Home Army. So then we arranged with him, you know, how do we be used, you know, when the time comes. And it's a funny thing, how the people, when we were about 200 kilometers from Warsaw, near the town of Zelva, you see, the people were telling us that there will be a war rising against the Germans in Warsaw. How the people knew, I don't know. You know. Which, of course, you could believe or you could disbelieve that, but there was the fact they knew something about it. Now and then, on the 31st of July, there was the first fight in Campinos, when the Germans arrived there. So it was a very successful thing. And when on the 1st of August the uprising started, we were given the task to take over, you know, the small flying fields near Warsaw, Bielany. Unfortunately, we didn't succeed, and there were quite heavy losses in that. You know, funny thing happened, you know, that in spring 1944, they were sent two officers, you know, to me. Both escaped from prisoner of war's camp in Germany, Dessau. And they arrived in Warsaw, and they were sent over there, you know, to us.
Polish.
Polish, yes. One was cavalry officer and the other was infantry officer. And as we learned, you know, from them, you know, they make a tunnel, you know, in this camp, And about 60 or 70 of them escaped through the tunnel, you know, one night. And some of them went to the west. One went to Switzerland. The other went, one went via Berlin to Poland. And about 10 of them went to Poland, but simply across, you know, without any help. So then all 10 safely arrived to Poland, you know. And two of them then were directed, you know, to send to me. Unfortunately, when one of them was killed, you know, on this first or second of August in Bielany, and the other was killed later in Warsaw, when our unit, about 800 strong, went to help, you know, the Warsaw uprising in the town. There were several fights in this Campinos forest. On the, I think it was on the 3rd or 4th of August, the Germans sent about 200 unit, 200 strong, to clean the forest. So I think about 30 of them were killed, and some of them escaped. Five or six, about 10 of them, I think we took as a prisoner of war, and then sent back to Germans, you know, this. And but the biggest success was there were nearly every day there was some sort of fight here and there, in some cases more than once. In the 2nd of November, you know, they were pressing us from the south east, the Germans pressing us, wanted to have a, this through the Campinos forest freeway to their unit headquarters in Modlin. And and then I decided that something has to be done, because they brought quite a strong artillery unit, and you know, our unit, which was guarding, you know, this road, closing the road, you know, for them, was very, very had a very big casualties. So I organized, you know, group, I think it was about 84 of chaps who went with me, and this was a forest, and the village was like that. Here was the German position. So we went by the village and attacked from the back.
From behind the Germans?
Yes, from behind. They didn't expect anything like that. So then it was a massacre of them. It was about 250 killed, and seven of our people didn't come back, you know, from that. And a number of ammunition carts were destroyed, about 16 artillery guns destroyed, and one artillery gun we took with us, but unfortunately there was limited ammunition to it. And then the fighting went on, but unfortunately this was nearly end of the Warsaw Uprising. During the Warsaw Uprising we took quite a lot of the parachute drops, you know, with weapons and so on in the Campinos forest. which then helped us, you know, to send some reinforcement to Warsaw. And when the uprising was nearly finished, so then the Germans started first, you know, to liquidate, you know, this Campinas forest. And then the major, who is in command, decided to go to the south. Unfortunately, there was not very good. I mean, the march was quite all right, but, you know, the sort of tactic of this was not very good. You know, we were caught in the pocket near the railway going from Warsaw to Częstochowa and Katowice. And the unit, which was then probably about 1,500, was completely destroyed. Oh, there were a few hundred killed, about 200 taken prisoner of war to Germany. And I was lucky enough to escape with another 250 people to the south, where we supposed to go. And later we found again one unit in the region of Opochno, and we joined this unit as a third Campinas battalion. But we didn't fight too long with them, because, you know, the Russians were standing on the Vistula. So the Germans took quite a lot of various units to the other side of Vistula. And it was very difficult, you know, to maneuver, you know, in this sort of circumstances.
Is this in the autumn now?
It is in the autumn. It was end of November, sort of end of October, beginning of November. Yes, 1944. I remember when we were in beginning of November, when we were in one of the villages stationed, the major CO called me and said to me, "Look, you take a squadron and go outside this village, and you will meet the horse cart over there. And there will be two or three people on the horse cart, so then bring them here." "All right, yes, sir." I went, and there were two people, and one, I recognized one of them, because he was the sort of, he was the chap, he was a colonel in the Polish Air Force, and after, he was in a bomber command, after sort of when he finished, you know, his bombing expedition in Britain, he volunteered to go to Poland. And he was dropped more or less at the same time as I was dropped, but later went back, you know, to London, because we did have I don't know, two or three planes, British plane from Italy, landed in Poland, bringing the people and taking again the very important people back, you know, to the West, to Italy. So he went to the West, and a few, sometime later, Beginning of, I think, or end of October, beginning of November, he was dropped back second time, you know, to Poland. And when I look at him, I recognize him, and he recognized me. He said, "Oh, you are here." "Yes, I'm here, sir." And it was a very funny thing. It was a Colonel Rutkowski. And he brought some instruction from London, and according to the instruction, we have to be disbanded. We actually, the whole regiment, which was about 1,500 strong. So what was done, that those people who could had a place to go to, all right, they can go.
What was the reason for being disbanded?
Because there was impossible to do any fighting over there. There was so many German units, you know, massed, you know, on the other side. The one side were Russians and the other side Germans. So we had in about 7 or 9 days, 6 or 7 very heavy fights. And of course, very many casualties. Yeah, so then, and the worst thing was what to do with the wounded. You know, this was the question. Because if somebody was killed, all right, sorry that he is killed, but it happens in the war. But when there was about 30 or 40 people wounded, and some of them needed, you know, hospital treatment, and there was no hospital then, so it was a tragedy, you know, as the people were dying somewhere without proper medical treatment. So then what we got, what we did, there were about 7 or 8 smaller groups, about 30 or 50, you know, from that regiment, and we were fighting, but in smaller groups, because then you had a chance to escape here. And I had, you know, the only one, again, horse squadron, who was very sort of practical, because when you fought here, then about 30 or 40 kilometers, there was just few hours, and you were somewhere else. And so, they couldn't find you, you know. German couldn't find you.
So the orders to disband really were to split up into
smaller units. Of course, not all the 1,500, because probably half of them, or even more than half of them, you know, went home, because there was no winter clothing for them. That was one thing. That's very important. There was too many of us. And then, you know, with this small unit, we fought until 17 of January 1945, when the fight was finished. One of the things which I think is worth mentioning, that is about beginning of, I don't remember exactly, beginning of September 1944, there was a group, they call it Hungarian. Hungarian wants to pass through our Campinos forest from the north to the south. So I was rather curious, and I sent an officer, go and see what sort of Hungarian they are. And they were Hungarian Jews, about 200 of them.
An armed unit?
No, not a work unit. Work unit, they were escorted by about 20 or 25 Hungarian. They call it Gestapo, Hungarian Gestapo. And they wanted to cross, you know, from the north to the south, because otherwise they had to go hundreds of kilometers round. And all right, so I said, all right, they can go, but take a horse cart, and this escort have to put, you know, their weapons, you know, on the horse cart, and later they can have it if the Jewish people wants to. And this weapon was guarded by our people, you know. And when the Jews came to us, you know, there were people about, you know, in the age of 50, 40, 50, or even more. You know, when I spoke to them, they all spoke German fluently. And there was, you know, managers of various businesses in Hungary, lawyers, you know, this sort of people, you know, this engineers, you know, this with the very high qualifications, you know. And finally, you know, they, about 50 of them remain with us. The rest went. When I asked them what to do with this Hungarian Gestapo, shall we finish them? Oh, no, 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 don't, because otherwise we will be responsible for them. All right, if you don't want, so then, all right. So then the rest we convey, you know, to outside our operational. And they went somewhere. What happened with them, I don't know. But unfortunately, the Warsaw Uprising was nearly to finish. And they, you know, these Hungarian Jews were allocated, I mean, they were to each company or cavalry squadron, there were a few of them, you know, attached. And after the sort of fight at Yaktorov near the railway station, so then I don't know what happened with them. Later on, a couple of weeks later, I found that one of these Jews, but he was very young one, remained with us, was still with us. And it was, he was, when I asked him, he was, he said that he's a ballet dancer from Debrecen. And when on the 17th of January 1945, we give him, you know, this sort of paper that he was fighting with the Germans, and we are asked all the authority to help him to get, you know, to Hungary. This was in German, in Polish, in Russian, and in Hungarian. In four languages he got, you know, this sort of things. And for a long time I wondered what happened with him. I think in 1968, in one of the communist papers in Poland, he gave his history. And he had quite a very high post in the